Hey, let's go on a Tuesday, December 16th, 2025. Ryan Armani, JR Afternoon. Brian Morton across the glass, as is Dominic Ballantini back with us. Danielle Mason somewhere back there. I see Rich Lozinski. Full house. Gang's all here on a Tuesday. Starting to warm up a little bit, too. Let me tell you, it is great to be back in studio with the people here high atop the Fisher Building, the Golden Tower. Are you kidding me? No place like it. And we've got a great show for you today, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll get you caught up on some news now as we move along. Police releasing new video and photos of the person of interest in the Brown University shooting. They say he is armed and dangerous. And this comes as the FBI intensifies that search. Providence Police say they've developed a new lead. The video showed the potential gunman walking near Brown University about 2 hours before the shooting. The man they suspect is about 5'8 with a stocky build. They are not sure of a motive yet, why he targeted the classroom that he was in. One of the interesting parts of this to me that I cannot figure out, while the gunman is still on the loose, Providence authorities are saying there is no threat to the public. How they can square the two, I just don't understand that. But nonetheless, that's what they're saying. Two people were killed. Nine were injured in the attack. And continuing on now, Australian officials releasing new details on the suspects in the anti-Semitic terror attack on Bondi Beach, saying the father-son duo who carried out that attack were inspired by ISIS. Hundreds were gathered to celebrate the first day of Hanukkah. 15 people killed, 24 people injured. Officials there say they went over to the Philippines to an area where they train ISIS and get weapons training. Now, the son was on the radar of authorities when he got back from the Philippines for his association with the members of a Sydney-based cell of the Islamic State terror group. No charges were brought on the son at the time. There was an ISIS flag in the car. Australia has some of the strictest gun laws in the world. And that is part of the story as well. How did these guys legally get their hands on weapons like this, especially the son who was on the radar of police? And then this to me, Rob Reiner, his wife Michelle, and their son, Nick. I cannot stop thinking about this particular story. The son of Rob and Michelle Reiner, 32-year-old son, Nick, was supposed to make his first court appearance earlier this morning, but he was not medically cleared to do so. The new images are made public as well. He was taken down. The details of this are stunning. He was taken down at the metro station about 15 miles away from the Reiner house, where the Reiners were found dead with their throats slashed. At 3:40 p.m., the bodies were found by their daughter, Romy. TMZ reporting that a masseuse went to the house to give a massage. Nobody answered the door, which was extremely unusual. So the masseuse then went to the daughter's house. She lived across the street. And ultimately, that's when the bodies were found. It's also being reported that this happened suspectedly after a party, a Christmas party at Conan O'Brien's house, where Nick showed up walking around asking people, why are you famous? Why are you famous? Why are you famous? There was a big shouting match and everybody left. Well, the Reiners then left. And their son, Nick, has openly shared his struggles with addiction in the past. But it is suspected now that after that fight at Conan O'Brien's Christmas party is when this all went down. Late Saturday, early Sunday morning, and then ultimately found on Sunday afternoon at about 3:40 p.m. Pacific time. Incredible stuff there. And we'll have more on that. Jamie Clayton is going to join us. She's the president and CEO of Oakland Family Services. We've had her on in the past. She's a terrific guest. And one of the reasons, the reason why I wanted to have her on today is because so many families out there, maybe it's you, maybe it's your neighbor, you know somebody, you have a friend. There are people in your life where there's drug addiction, there's mental illness with loved ones. What do you do? What do you do? How do you go about getting the help you need, they need? How do you go about protecting yourself? Because this tragedy really highlights drug addiction and mental illness. And how do you protect yourself from a family member? What do you do? That's what we're going to talk to Jamie Clayton about. But first, I want to check in with WJR's Marie Osborne. A Michigan woman with global connections is now among the FBI's most wanted people. WJR's Marie Osborne has the details on that for us. Good afternoon to you, Marie.
Hi, Ryan. So federal agents say 73-year-old Mary Carol McDonald built an elaborate persona as a wealthy heiress tied to a famous aviation family, claiming access to a secret trust fund worth tens of millions of dollars. Investigators allege the reality, though, it's far different. She's accused of swindling banks out of more than $30 million, including nearly $15 million from the Bank of California. McDonald, who once ran a television production company in California, has been spotted in headlines coast to coast. She's dubbed the fake airline heiress in New York tabloids. The FBI information, though, not specific which Michigan community McDonald was tied to. Authorities believe she may now be overseas, maybe in Dubai, and they warn that she could be using multiple aliases. Her wanted poster describes her as blonde, blue-eyed, 5'7", with a scar on her right knee, and there are pictures of her online and from the FBI. Charged with bank fraud and identity theft, McDonald's case is a reminder that scams often spike during the holiday season. Ryan, the FBI is urging anybody who encounters her or someone matching her description to come forward with that information.
I always say in cases like this, I wonder what, because you have to be so clever, you have to be so smart to pull a scheme and pull off a scam like this. If people like that used that intelligence for good, what could you do in those cases?
I've thought the same thing, This takes so much effort. Why don't you just like do something good with that?
I mean, in some cases, I can't pull $20 out of a bank, let alone pulling $20 million.
I know.
Oh my goodness! I don't mean to laugh, but it is something you can't even imagine. Marie, thanks so much. We'll check
Thank
in with you.
You
next hour. All right, coming right back. What do you do if you have a family member, if you have a friend that is dealing with some sort of drug addiction or some sort of mental illness? How do you protect yourself? How do you protect them? We're coming right back with Jamie Clayton, Oakland Family Services, 760 WJR. 760 WJR on a Tuesday in the city of Detroit. No matter where you are in the country, in the world perhaps, you were affected by what happened to Rob and Michelle Reiner, allegedly at the hands of their son Nick. Somebody who has dealt with drug addiction in the past, mental illness in the past. And if you're just tuning in, Nick Reiner was supposed to appear in court for the first time today, but he has not been medically cleared to do so. So that did not happen today. And one of the things I wanted to talk about is, what do you do if you have a family member who is dealing with mental illness or drug addiction, and you live perhaps in fear a little bit about what could happen? Are you safe? Are they safe? To help us talk about it, Jamie Clayton, President and CEO of Oakland Family Services. Jamie, thanks so much for the time. I know this is something that you probably hear a lot from family members. Oh, what do you do? So first and foremost, when you heard the news about the Reiners and allegedly it happened at the hands of their son, what was your reaction?
Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me. You know, I have a mixed reaction as a professional. I want us to be really careful. We don't really know the details yet. We just know what we're hearing. And I want to be careful that it doesn't get salacious. And, you know, there was also rumors that the son had been sober for quite some time. So I get nervous whenever this kind of thing happens, the same thing around Brown University, these terrible mass shootings, that we're automatically start tying violence and mental illness together when the majority of people who deal with mental health issues or substance misuse and addiction are not violent. They're your next door neighbor. Like you said, they could be a family member and they're just trying to get better. There is not necessarily a correlation between violence and these issues. And so I'm happy. I want us to talk about what to look for and how to help people. But I did think it was important to put that out there.
Sure, no doubt. But Nick himself has admitted and the parents admitted that he had dealt with mental issues in the past or mental illness in the past. And, you know, if you do deal with something like that, I mean, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm not a therapist, but perhaps you're on some sort of program to continue to stay good. And I mean, I don't know the details of Nick. I'm just going by what he said and his parents. And I guess, Jamie, if you are in fear of somebody, what do you do to try to stay safe? I guess I don't.
I hear you. Yep. So I think the first thing that you want to do in any situation, if you're not feeling safe, is to take some kind of steps. So that could be, helping that person live someplace else. That could be putting in rules and guidelines, and it could be calling the police. You know, I think things are really escalating at the point that you're not feeling safe. And if you're not feeling safe for yourself, the person that you're afraid of is at risk as well. So I think that, you know, even though we heard that Nick has been in and out of treatment, you know, treatment works. Counseling is key and is important. And I suggest people, you know, do that for themselves. I think the other thing is that a lot of times, things escalate when a family is trying to control someone else's behaviors or emotions or reactions, particularly when you're talking about substance use or mood changes in mental health. And one of the hardest things we do when we're doing treatment or as if we know when I back in the day when I did therapy is actually meeting people where they are, not where you wish they would be. I'll say that again, meeting people where they are, not where you wish they would be. And so putting a lot of stigma and stipulations on people can escalate things quickly. At any point.
I just want to highlight that part of it. What does that look like? Is there an example or what does that look like?
Yeah. So it could be that to separate the issues, even though mental health and substance use typically go together. Let's say you're dealing with someone that you think is drinking too much, just to make it as easy as possible. And if you meet them where they are, it could be maybe they have said that they're not sure if they have a problem. So if they're not sure they have a problem, but you're fighting and telling them they do, that isn't going to get you where you want to go. Meet them where they are, which is how will we know if you have a problem? What if you try to stop drinking to see if you have a problem? So hammering somebody with what you think you know in your head, I know you have a drug problem, I know you have an alcohol problem, I know you're depressed, is not necessarily going to help someone. We know now that mental health and substance use issues are chronic diseases and illnesses, just like diabetes or high blood pressure. There's an actual physical medical component. And while we might, you know, tell someone we wish they would change their diet, we don't stigmatize them. We don't get in fights with them. Most of us don't, about their health issues. We try and get someone to go to a doctor. We talk to them about taking care of themselves. we try to coax someone there out of love. And I think because there's behavioral issues that certainly go with mental health and substance use, it's a bit harder to meet people where they are. In treatment, we talk a lot about different stages of change. And if you think for yourself, even about a diet, you might think you need to go on a diet, but what are all the steps you have to take to actually go on a diet and then to actually stay on one? It's the same when you're talking about treating your depression or treating your marijuana use. You have to start understanding you have a problem, and then there's lots of steps to get there. And so as family members, if we can walk with that person, come from a place of love and caring, it's usually much more effective. But by the point you're truly afraid of someone, then you need to be taking appropriate steps so they're not in your home, so that you are protecting yourself and others. And you know, there's a big gap between the things we're talking about.
No doubt. And I agree with that. We're talking to Jamie Clayton, president and CEO of Oakland Family Services. You know, I think about what happened at the, I believe it was the Walmart in Traverse City, too, where the person stabbed 11 people or whatever the case was.
Right.
I remember the mother saying, you know, we begged people to try to get him help, and there's nothing you could do about it, essentially, was the gist of her argument. And I think about that mother, and I feel for her. You know, what do you do, essentially, when you have somebody, a son, perhaps, in her case, that you know is not well, and, you know, ultimately went out and injured people? Like, what does that mother do? I just my heart bleeds for people that don't know where to turn.
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation. And she talked a lot about the mental health system being broken and where you can access it and where you can't. And some of us are working hard towards that kind of systemic change. You know, there is the ability to go and file petitions at the court for guardianship or for commitment. It takes a lot to get to that point. So I think it's really about continuing to focus on the things that might be in our ability and the things that aren't. And so, again, can I accompany them to an appointment? If it's someone who, let's say, will start with, they're willing to see their personal doctor, but they're not willing to talk about mental health, start there. Most doctor's offices now are equipped with certain kinds of screenings that can be done for mental health and substance use. And so it's really like we talk about what the moment of truth is for someone when they realize they need help or are open to it. And it's creating the best possible environment so you're not at odds with someone when that moment of truth comes. But I'll be honest, Ryan, it's not a perfect system. Mental health and substance issues are very difficult. And we're not going to stop every single one of these, I don't think. But I think the more we make treatment accessible, the more there's parity and there's not insurance blockages, and the system has more access points for people. And the more conversations like this one, where people understand that you can go to your insurance, you can go to your primary doctor, you can go to a mental health clinic. These are all the places to get help. And if you can't get the other person to go, you can go yourself to learn how you could best cope.
No doubt. That we need
kinds of conversations are the best.
We need more Jamie Claytons out there. Jamie, we appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. Presidency Oakland Family Services. Coming right back. Would you disassociate with somebody because of political beliefs? Somebody did that today. Tell you that story next. And take your phone calls at 800-859-0-WJR. 760-WJR. So, earlier today, Mick Foley, of all people, of, you know, you wake up in the morning and you're like, how am I going to work Mick Foley, WWE Hall of Famer, into the show today? I did not wake up thinking I would work Mick Foley into the show today, but he's in today's show, Mick Foley. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. And he posted on Instagram, and if you want to weigh in on this, 800-859-0-WJR, 800-859-0957. Mick Foley posted parting ways with the WWE. And he says, while I've been concerned about the WWE's close relationship with Donald Trump for several months, especially in the light of his administration's ongoing cruel and inhumane treatment of immigrants and pretty much anyone who looks like an immigrant, reading the president's incredibly cruel comments in the wake of Rob Reiner's death is the final straw for me. I no longer wish to represent a company that coddles a man so seemingly void of compassion as he marches our country towards autocracy. Last night, I informed WWE Talent Relations that I would not be making any appearances for the company as long as this man remains in office. Additionally, I will not be signing a new Legends deal when my current one expires in June. I love WWE, will always treasure my time with them, and deeply appreciative of all the opportunities they afforded me. But in the words of Popeye the Sailor, I stands all I can stands, and I can't stands no more. I got nothing, folks. I got nothing. So a couple of things about this. I do got something, actually. I do got something. I always find it humorous when people make stands against companies or people when you've already gotten what you've wanted from them. In other words, Mick Foley has made millions and millions of dollars because of the WWE. And now, all of a sudden, he's going to say, nope, not going to work with you, WWE. And second, he is okay with Vince McMahon. He was okay for working for a company for an owner that has been accused of rape, that has been accused of womanizing, that has been accused of a lot of different things. He's okay with that, but not okay with a statement that Donald Trump puts on Truth Social. Got it. I just think these things are so silly, number one. 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. And when you work for a company for 40 years, 30 years, you know the people, right? I mean, we all have somebody probably that we've known for 30, 40 years, what have you, and they don't vote similarly to the way you vote, and you can't understand why. But do you disassociate from people that vote differently from you? I just think that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I'm not talking to that person. That's a Trump voter. I mean, ridiculous, right? 800-859-0WJR. William in River Rouge, you are on 760-WJR. How you doing, William?
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for placing it, buddy.
Hey, you know, this whole deal with Trump. Ryan, I want you to put yourself in Donald Trump's shoes. Since he came down that escalator in 2016, he's been nothing but scrutinized. And called names and not giving any kind of sympathy or credit for anything that he's trying to do for this country. And these people in Hollywood have sat there. They showed what was the one lady showed getting his head cut off and putting a noose and the stuff that this
I know it
said about him. How would you feel about somebody if they said that kind of stuff about you?
I wouldn't feel great about it, William. I wouldn't feel great about it, but I will say this, just to go back to something that I said yesterday countless times, and I said it also before, a lot of people kind of jumped on board as well. I thought it was a terrible statement. He should have never said what he said about Rob Reiner and his wife. Never in a million years should he have said it. But just as it relates to Mick Foley, you know, when you're blaming a divorce with a company because of what Donald Trump said in a Truth Social, but you've gotten everything out of that company that you possibly could have gotten out of it, and now you want to take a stand? You don't want to take a stand against the owner of the company that was accused of rape and sued a million times in six ways to Sunday? I mean, I just, the Mick Foley part of it to me is really silly. And it's almost like, you know, you take advantage. You want to be one of the cool kids or something like that. I'm going to take a stand now after I've made all my millions from that bad company. You know, no, man. Sorry. It doesn't fly with me. You get what I'm saying?
Look at it, Mark. Yeah, right. But how, you know, like TV all day long. We got these programs like The View.
Well, it's just like Marjorie Taylor Greene. To be honest with you, Billy, it's like if I can call you Billy, I just feel like we're friends at that point. All right. You know, it's like Marjorie Taylor Greene, to be honest with you. Marjorie Taylor Greene was a pariah by all of these national news channels, and now she talks bad about Trump. So now she's on The View, and now she's on CNN, and now she's on all these different news stations. She's the darling of the media because you talk bad about Trump. It's a playbook like, you know, it's a very basic playbook. Billy, thanks so much. Call back anytime. We appreciate you, William. Charlie in Warren, you're on 760 WJR. How you doing, Chuck?
Call me Charlie, please.
Call you Charlie. All right. I thought we were close friends, Charlie. Come on, man.
I'm a Trumpster, but I can't agree with, well, I can see why President Trump said what he said, because what you just said a few minutes ago or less, a lot of people from Hollywood are dead set against President Trump. They say some of the worst things you could possibly say. You just repeated a lot of it, what I'm thinking about. But the meathead, I forgot his real name.
Rob Reiner.
Yeah, he died in the worst possible way a human being can die in. Him and his wife both. He got slipped by his son's knife, by his son, and that's pretty bad.
Horrible.
And yeah, to say the least. And but you know, as you've just put it, Trump is constantly being put down. All the time. So he left no feeling for what happened to the poor guy. I have nothing against the movie actor. I have nothing against his wife. I really haven't heard a word from him since All in the Family went off the air. I was not aware of all of his fame and fortune that he did, but I don't keep up with the idiot box that much at all. That's my opinion.
I appreciate it, Charlie.
I have mixed feelings about President Trump.
Sorry to cut you off there, Charlie, but I'm up against a break here. I'm way over for it. But I appreciate your perspective. I appreciate your call. And yes, I will call you Charlie next time. See, now William let me call him Billy. Charlie did not want me to call him Chuck. But we'll see. We'll see if I can call Dr. Chad. Dr. Chad. We're going to talk to Dr. Chad Audi, president and CEO of the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. It's our WJR Cares campaign. We'll talk to Dr. Chad next. We'll do that. 760 WJR. It is a WJR Cares Day. And as part of the WJR Cares campaign, we bring in Dr. Chad Audi, the president and CEO of Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries, who does such incredible and important and impactful work for nearly 20 years. Dr. Chad Audi, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. You can call me Chad all day long.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks so much for that.
Thank you.
Dr. Chad, just first and foremost, for the listening audience who doesn't keep up, tell us about the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries, what you do there, and why the work is so important there.
You know, Detroit Rescue Mission started in 1909, so it has been serving the community for 116 years. And today we are providing every single day service to 2,500 people a night, providing about 4,500 meals a day. And what makes DRMM unique is we don't just meet emergency need. We restore dignity and help people rebuild their life. We provide everyday warm meals, safe shelter, addiction recovery, housing for veterans, support for returning citizens, services for seniors, and help for women and children in escaping crisis. We also have services for youth. We send them every year about 1,200 youth to our camp in Howell, Michigan. So we walk with people from their hardest moment towards stability, independence, and hope. And that's what makes us a different organization. That's exactly what we do every day.
Talk to me about how people can help this holiday season over the next couple of weeks specifically.
First of all, today is a very special day because of WJR Care Day. We have, for anyone who donates today, only today, for every dollar donated, we can match it with $3 from an anonymous donor. So every dollar today is matched with $3, so that goes a long way. And the rest, it's very easy. You just have to go to www.drmm.org, or you can simply call a number 313-993-4700, and somebody will help you immediately.
Talk to me about partnering with the Pistons and Feed the Children and all of the different things that they will help with and assist with this holiday season.
You know, the Pistons saw a great opportunity to partner with us. So they open a pantry for our veterans as well as our women and children, and we make food boxes and take to the seniors who are in need. And this is exactly what we are going to do this holiday. And we just finished wrapping up giving out more than 45,000 gifts to almost 8,000 children. That's almost 2,000 families last Saturday. And for sure, we do one, you know, the shelter is known just to take people in, but we decided on 3rd Street to do every Thursday a one day where we bring in women from the community so they can get all the necessity stuff, whether if it's clothing, gloves, hats, mittens, as well as food, and then have some type of counseling session, trying to take them off the street and put them into a more stable condition.
So for people out there, again, if you'd like to donate today, and again, Dr. Chad, I just want to be correct on this. Every dollar that's donated today will be matched courtesy of a generous donor, and they will match that up to $3. For every $1 you give, it'll be tripled, essentially.
That is correct.
Unbelievable. And you can donate now at drmm.org, drmm.org, or you can call right now 313-993-4700, 313-993-4700 if you'd like to donate to the Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. Each dollar you donate today only will be matched. It'll be triple your donation. Dr. Chad, talk to me about adopting families, and this is such a special part of year. So many people want to help this time of year, I believe, and the Adoptive Family Program is a good way to do that. Talk to me about that.
You know, the Adoptive Family is a great way to get, a lot of people call us and say, hey, I'd like to get involved. What can I do? How my kids can work? And we found it would be a great idea when we bring a vetted people who are in need, as well as clients who are being served, to be adopted by outside families. So what we do, we let them write their need and wish list, and we pair them with a donor. And donor will go and do the shopping for them. And then one day we throw a big party where we bring Santa Claus and we do arts and crafts, music. And we ask the donor if they like to come and give their gifts. Otherwise, we have a way of distributing all those gifts to the people who are sponsored. So this way, the donor gets very happy, and they get opportunity to teach their kids and their family how to donate and to have some fun giving. And the recipients who are will be very grateful because we're not getting anything. We're just getting things that at least they need or they wish they had.
Isn't it funny to for so many people, and funny's not the right word, but you know what I'm talking about. It is funny on a lot of these wish lists from these families, doctor, it is the necessities: socks, correct, underwear, toothbrush, things that maybe you and I and everybody out there listening right now takes for granted. So many of these wish lists consist of just the basic hygiene necessities.
You're absolutely right. When we see those wish lists, you know, sometimes funny, I take it to my kids and I show them what's the wish list of the people who are in need, and they will shake their heads. Yeah. It's a great lesson for people who God had blessed them to see how much they're being blessed and given opportunity how much they can bless others with stuff sometimes they just have and they don't know what to do with it.
Again, you're absolutely right about that, Dr. Chad. It is certainly an opportunity as a family to perhaps adopt a family, and you can kind of start that charitable giving back to the community. And if you do it, you're teaching your kids how to do it, and it's a chain reaction of just giving and continuing to help the community. Dr. Chad Audie, we always appreciate speaking with you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
You got it. And again, today, drmm.org. You can donate today, drmm.org, or call 313-993-4700. Each dollar you donate today will be tripled thanks to a generous donor. We're coming right back. Top of the hour. News next. 760 WJR. Hey, hour number two on a Tuesday. If you missed any part of hour number one, we invite you to check it out, WJR.com or the WJR free mobile app. I encourage you, if you have not given yourself a Christmas gift, a holiday gift, your gift should be downloading that free WJR mobile app. How about that? It won't cost you a thing. We know times are tight. Maybe your budget is tight this holiday season. Perhaps go ahead and download that WJR free mobile app. Free. And you can listen to us anywhere you are. Maybe you're going to Florida or some beach vacation, and you want to take us with you, you can do that. Just pop us on the listen live portion of the app, or you can listen to us anytime you'd like to. WJR, we've got you covered. I do want to get to some Michigan stuff here, and I say Michigan stuff because there's a lot of it. For the first time, we have heard from Biff Poggi. Biff Poggi, of course, the now interim head coach. So the investigation into the University of Michigan athletic department and football program continuing. The team is getting set for a bowl game appearance. They're getting set to play the Texas Longhorns in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. Now, Wolverines interim head coach Biff Poggi spoke for the first time at the Citrus Bowl media day yesterday. Here's what he had to say about how the players are reacting to the Sharon Moore scandal.
I mean, it has been a tumultuous time, and a lot of, you know, anger, and then, you know, first disbelief, then anger, then really what we're in right now is the phase of, the kids, quite frankly, feel very betrayed, and we're trying to work through that.
That is an incredible piece of audio. Genuine, honest, authentic Biff Poggi really sharing with us all how the Michigan players are feeling about this. Because one of the things about these college coaches, and really anybody affiliated with the university, maybe it's the president, maybe it's a staffer, maybe it's a PA, maybe it's the professor. It is about the kids. And they are kids. I don't care how much money Bryce Underwood is making, he's still a kid. I truly believe that. I could barely take care of myself at 28, let alone 18. You know, some of these high school kids that committed to the University of Michigan just 2 weeks ago did not see this coming. I, too, would feel betrayed by all of this. There's no doubt about it. So what has this week been like for Biff Poggi? Here's what he had to say about that.
Met individually with all the players multiple times and with the parents, Zoomed with the parents multiple times. And the message has been listening, right? I want to listen to them. I want to understand what the kids are feeling and what their parents are feeling. And so a lot of listening. And there's been a wide range of emotions, as you can imagine. And we've kind of are going through those steps. They're not over yet. And I don't expect them to be over for a while, quite frankly. But our main message is the mandate that Ward Manuel gave me as the athletic director when he asked me to be the interim coach was to love and take care of the kids. And so that's what I'm spending all of my time doing is loving kids.
Man, and there's nobody better to do it right now. No, I do not believe Biff Poggi should have the head coaching job of the future. But he is the right man for right now. He's the perfect guy to help right the ship, to help calm the storm. Biff Poggi, big fan of his, and he is doing exactly as he is tasked to do. Michigan and Texas on December 31st from the Citrus Bowl. Now, a sweeping investigation into clergy abuse in Michigan has revealed troubling findings in the Diocese of Grand Rapids. WJR's Marie Osborne has a look at the report findings. Pretty disturbing here, Marie.
The Attorney General's office reports that more than 50 priests have faced accusations of sexual misconduct dating back to 1950. Most of those named are no longer alive. None remain in active ministry. And while two were convicted years ago, the majority of these cases could not move forward due to statutes of limitation, lack of evidence, or victims unwilling to testify. Attorney General Dana Nessel says the report is part of a broader effort to give survivors a voice and ensure their experiences are acknowledged. She emphasized that accountability extends beyond criminal charges, highlighting the importance of validating victims' stories. Bishop David Walkowak responded with an apology, calling these findings painful but necessary. He pledged that the church has to do better. This is the fifth report released in the state's seven diocese investigation, which began in 2018. Ryan, more than 1,000 priests have served in Grand Rapids over the last 75 years, but none currently ministering were implicated in this report.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a positive. But again, you know, you hear these instances and what went down in the diocese here in Metro Detroit, in Detroit, over the course of decades as well. And it's just, man, it rattles your faith and makes you wonder. But nonetheless, you just keep on keeping on, I suppose. I mean, faith is a strong thing. So we'll see where this goes.
Indeed. Now, this report did not uncover anything new. These were allegations and things that were pretty well known, but this now report compiles all of it in one place. And again, due to statutes of limitation, again, lack of evidence in some of the cases or even victims not wanting to testify, really these cases did not move forward due to all that.
Yeah, and just even if it is old material that's brought to light once again, you know it's right there for us all to see and read again, I guess, mm-hmm. in one spot. My goodness. Marie, we'll talk to you tomorrow, my friend.
Thank you.
You got it. That's WJR's Marie Osborne. All right, coming up next, are you going to the company holiday party this year? Are they a good thing? Or is it forced fun? We're going to talk to John Bowerman. We'll do that next. And then coming up later, we'll also take your calls today, 800-859-0WJR. We'll do that at 3:35. Jim Harbaugh spoke for the first time on Sherrone Moore, what he had to say about Michigan's head coach and what he's feeling. And he's reached out to Sherrone Moore as well. All that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. 760 WJR. Have you been to your company holiday party yet this year? Are you going this weekend, perhaps? Are you having one? Are you happy you don't have one? All things to be considered. All things we're going to talk about right now with John Bowerman, co-founder of Stealth Consulting. Mr. Bowerman, thanks so much for the time, my friend. How are you today? Happy holidays to you. Merry Christmas.
Hey, thank you. Good for having me today. I'm still digging myself out of the snow.
No doubt. We're not having any fun over here with that snow either. But let me ask you, it feels like this is such a question in the workplace. Whether you're a manager or an employee, what do you do around company holiday party time? So many people look forward to them, and then a lot of people can't stand them.
Yeah, well, it's not that the people that can't stand them are anti-holiday party. I think, you know, today we are in the age of authenticity. I think more than ever is people are just not a fan of obligation disguised as generosity. And I think a lot of holiday parties come across just as that.
You know, there was a time, I just feel like even in my own experience, where holiday parties were such an elaborate, extravagant thing that you really did look forward to. I mean, there were great parties. And then, you know, as the experience is scaled down too, so did the excitement level for the holiday party. The fact that the party itself just seems like, in many cases, thrown together, for lack of a better way to say it, is that part of the decline of the excitement of the holiday party as well?
I think it is part, right? What you're asking for as a company is that, hey, by coming to the holiday party, it's not more work, but it's more gifts. It should be more excitement. Some of the best holiday parties today happen when they're thrown between the hours of 3 and 5 p.m. So it's, you know, either you work or you come to the party. Well, that's an easier decision than join us after hours and extend the time that you have with us. But another couple of big things impacting this are, one is the fact that today people identify less with work as part of their identity. Years ago, the workplace was one of your biggest socialization opportunities. And today, with social media, you know, Discord, all kinds of different avenues, that's not the case. And also, it used to be more and more that people cared about showing up to the holiday party because it made their manager happy or it made leadership happy. And that is less of a concern today as well.
We are talking to John Bowerman, the co-founder of Stealth Consulting, just talking about company holiday parties. Are they a good thing? Is it forced fun? Does it feel like forced fun to get people out of the workplace? You know, when I started, and now granted it was 25 years ago essentially, but and I had a much different shift, but you do a happy hour, you go out after work, you do things together. I don't feel like that happens a lot anymore. Just that forget about that holiday party. Coworkers going out for happy hour, is that even still a thing?
It's still a thing, but not as big as it used to be. And we do have the COVID era to thank a lot for that. It really introduced and expedited the remote work environment, which has many great qualities, but you know, one of the qualities it doesn't have is fostering more camaraderie and time spent. There was a time, I'm sure you remember as well as I do, where I would spend more time with the people that I worked with than anyone else. And you develop that bond. And so as you build trust during the workday, you want to extend that relationship over a drink or socialization later. And we just don't see that same culture happening in many companies.
You know, this so-called forced fun that you talk about is, well, isn't that kind of a good thing, though? Like, just a company that's trying to get people together in this post-COVID era of work from home or work wherever, this so much singular work. Can it be seen as a good thing that a company is trying to bring people together?
I think it can be. I think as long as the spirit and the approach is not, we got to check the holiday box, then it lands, right? Everyone's received that gift. Everyone's gotten that card in the mail that maybe is, mass produced or something like that. And you look at it and say, well, you know, it would have been best not to waste the paper that it's on. But when it's special, when a company treats the holiday party as if they are hosts that are hosting guests, that your team are guests at the party, and you're really putting forth an effort to make it something special, then it will land that way. But when it's, when you're just checking the box, hey, we need to have it, you're almost better off not.
You know, the workplace has changed so much just in my own experience over the last 20, 25 years. In your new book titled You're Not Lost, You're Just Starting, originally written to help kids answer the big question, what do you want to do with my life? What do I want to do with my life? That is always something to ask. What is the work experience going to be like for those kids, or maybe the high schoolers or college kids, or maybe even if you're in elementary school now, what is work going to be like, 15, 20 years from now?
Well, I can tell you one of the things I've failed at many times, and I'm really good at not being able to do well, is predict the future. So I don't know exactly, and that's a big part of the book is releasing the burden of having to do just that. And for a lot of teens that are considering, where do I go to college? What kind of path do I want to go into? Or for anyone working right now, is how is AI going to change what my job looks like in 5 or 10 years? It's not so much about worrying what that's going to look like as it is being capable and prepared to pivot as that changes.
Yeah.
But I do see an emergence of more camaraderie where people, where salary, some of those things aren't the number one things people are looking for. We're seeing that emerge right now. And it's, they're going to look for, I think we're going to see more genuine connection be the goal versus social connection.
Yeah, I think the reason I asked too, and obviously nobody can predict the future, especially this one that we're in, but it feels like work looked the same for the last 40, 50, 60 years. You go to college or you don't, and you go into one of the trades, or you go to college and you go to get a desk job and you sit there for 8 hours and you work 40 hours a week, 5 days a week, and on and on and on and on. It looked the same. It feels like that is changing and has changed. And that's why I ask, what is it going to be like? It feels like it will change for sure if it's not already.
Yeah, we're living in an age, and we're just getting started, where anyone can be a developer with language. AI has opened the door for that, where you no longer need to write code to make something work. You just need to be able to describe it. And the workplace is going to look a lot more like people using tools that we would have never thought possible, and using those in a smart way with each other. And one of the things that you're not going to be able to replace with technology is that true human empathy and and working together.
Without question. John Bowerman, thanks so much. Co-founder, Stealth Consulting, new book, You're Not Lost, You're Just Starting. Get it anywhere books are sold. Thank you so much, my friend. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You got it. Coming up next, we are going to take your phone calls at 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. If you want to weigh in on the company party, when was the last great company party that you attended? Do you love the company party? Do you hate it? I want to hear from you. Also, as a footnote, you're going to hear from Jim Harbaugh weigh in on the Sharon Moore situation. All that and so much more. 760 WJR. You know, just on the heels of that conversation of the holiday parties, silly question. Is there anything good that can come from them? You know, in so many ways, if you do it outside of the office, okay, if you go to a bar, a restaurant, a hall where there's alcohol being served, is there, I always think, and it's nothing against holiday parties or anything like that, I think the norm now is to do it within work hours, you know, at the place of wherever you work. You know, for instance, at Fox 2, where I've been for a long time, we used to do a part. We've had parties at the DAC. We've had parties at the Detroit Zoo. Now we have, you know, we do it in our conference room upstairs. We have like a breakfast buffet for the morning crew and for the night crew. There's like some sort of lunch or whatever. You know, it's not for any other reason other than I think for the most part, I mean, maybe you don't want to infringe on people's, I don't know. What do you guys do? Did you do a lot? I know for Halloween, we had a Halloween party here. We do things. We have like different fun contests and things like that. I don't know.
Was there a thing on Thursday?
Thursday,
yeah, right. In the conference room,
right? Yeah. I mean, but that's kind of what you do these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean,
for whatever reason,
we were talking about it in here, and it's like we used to go out. Danielle, where Danielle's mother works, she plans all the parties, and mm-hmm. they go out and they drink and they do stuff. It's like no, can't drink around people. I start drinking, then I start being honest, and then everything goes against me, and everybody's mad at me.
I think that's one of the things too, Brian. When you work for a small business, you know, or a bigger corporation type workplace, I think the bigger corporations too are a lot more on the careful side,
yeah,
as opposed to like a small business. Like my buddy just had a work party. I had gone through. It was great. It was his entire team. He got a small team of people. Everybody sure. had a good time. Booze, food, all that good stuff. But only bad can happen, right? Yes. You get the guy that drinks too much, maybe hits on your coworker's wife, and it's over from there.
Or says something completely inappropriate. Right. Or, you're going to hear about it Monday.
Right, or you're trying to hit on the boss or it doesn't work out. It's not good.
No.
It's not never good. End well it's never your good. Career. Right. Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you some stories off the air.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure a million people listening right now have a story. If you do have a work story from yesteryear about a holiday party, 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. I did want to get you this piece of audio because it's new, it's fresh, and it just happened a little bit ago. Jim Harbaugh was on the Dan Patrick radio show. Jim Harbaugh, of course, the head coach of the LA Chargers. He was the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines, and he was the head coach that really elevated Sharon Moore to the limelight at Michigan. You know, when Jim Harbaugh was going through all of his different issues and investigations and suspensions, it was Jim Harbaugh that gave the keys to the Cadillac, the keys to the car, to Sharon Moore and helped promote him into this position of head coach of the Michigan football Wolverines. Here's what Harbaugh had to say about Sharon Moore today.
When's the last time you talked to Sharon Moore?
Early December, but I have texted him.
Nothing since he was arrested.
Just text.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
How are his spirits?
I think it's a tragedy. It's the worst days of his life, and keep it together and take care of your family. That's the message. And getting spiritual guidance, is really critical.
I've been asked so many times, what's the latest with Sharon Moore? And it's almost like, since he's not the coach at Michigan anymore, it's almost now just a private situation between he and his wife. I don't know. I did see the picture, the photo of he and his wife walking out of what appears to be the Washtenaw County Jail. He was walking in front of her. She was right there. Really, really just sad. And highlights how quickly things can change. Truly, how quickly your life can change on a dime. And look, this was at the hands of Sharon Moore. He knew what he was doing. He felt perhaps very invincible and that he could do anything he wanted and not get caught or not get in trouble for it because he was the head coach at Michigan. You're almost drunk with power. You are drunk with power. You are drunk with the ability to do whatever you want because there are never any consequences to you. Well, he lost. And I hope that he can find some peace in his life. I hope his wife can find some peace in his life. I will tell you, she did not look like somebody who was surprised by all of this either. I don't know what happens in their household, but I mean, my goodness, worst kept secret in Ann Arbor that he was going around. I don't know. Crazy stuff, man. 760 WJR. Well, nothing silent about this guy. Steve Courtney joins us now. Hey, Steve. That's the best I got. It's the best I got. How you doing,
well
buddy?
Well played. Well played, my friend. Ryan, hopefully all is well, sir. And we got Red Wing hockey tonight back at the friendly confines of LCA after a very successful six-game road trip. They will be playing host to the New York Islanders tonight. They'll drop the puck about 7 o'clock or so.
Can I give a shameless plug? Can I give a shameless plug about that game?
Of course you can.
That game aired locally on Fox 2.
Yes.
About it.
Take us behind the works here. What's the deal with that?
Well, we at Fox 2 have acquired the rights to simulcast some games on Fox 2, so we're going to do that.
That's a win-win for everybody.
Absolutely.
Involved.
Last year, I think we had 10 games. And this year, I believe we have, I don't know what the exact amount of games, but I think it's in that neighborhood as well.
Well, that's good news, like I say, for everybody involved. And the Red Wings, of course, coming off that 4-0 win over the Chicago Blackhawks. And I'll point out at this juncture, the fine netminder acquired during the offseason with a lot of hype, John Gibson, all of a sudden, with 2 shutouts over his last 3 appearances. So there you go. Tonight's tilt will mark the 3rd meeting between these 2 fine clubs. The Islanders won the previous matchup 5-0. Now the captain, Dylan Larkin, he is pacing this Red Wing club. 17 goals, 16 assists, but don't forget about the cat. That's right, Alex DeBrincat, the fellow that scored deuce against the Blackhawks Saturday night, has 7 goals, 5 assists over his last 10 games. Speaking of which, over the last 10, the Red Wings at 5-3-2. The Islanders come in 6-3-1 in that span. The Atlantic Division, we've talked about it, Ryan. It's kind of jumbled up here a little bit. You got Tampa Bay and the Red Wings, both at 18-12-3, both at 39 points. And I'll let you know, Carolina leads the Eastern Conference with 44 points. So there you go. More good news for the Pistons last night, huh? We were talking 24 hours ago, my friend, that Cade Cunningham was averaging 26.9 points per game. Yeah, he outdid that last night in Boston. 32 points to go along with 10 boards. The Pistons get the 112-105 win over the Celtics. The Pistons now have won four in a row. Don't know if you had a chance to watch much of it with your early wake up there, Ryan, but I'm telling you, this is a resilient Piston team.
I did watch a little bit of it, and let me tell you, just 2 years ago, they're 21-5, Steve. 21-5. But they didn't win five games in the first half of the year. They didn't win their fifth game 2 years ago until January 24th. They were 5-39 when they won their first game, fifth game. And to see this team in two short years with this incredible turnaround is, I can't even explain it. They were 5-30, won their fifth game January 24th, 2024. And here we are 2 years later, they're 21-5. Incredible turnaround.
Quite the culture change. You could compare it to what Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell obviously did with the Detroit Lions and Trajan Langdon, as well as J.B. Bickerstaff. I just love watching Bickerstaff on that Piston bench. Doesn't get rattled. He's into it. He's emotional. He's passionate. Everything he needs to be. And, you know, you've got different guys stepping up for this Pistons team. Look at Caris LeVert, 19 quality minutes last night. He and Tobias Harris each had 13 points last night. And the Pistons, 9-3 on the road. So that's very important. And I'll point out that they're going to be in Dallas. That's going to be Thursday night to take on the Mavericks, who are a 10-17 ball club. But don't forget, we're going to get our first up-close-and-personal look at Cooper Flagg. How about what he did just last night, scoring the most points by an 18-year-old in NBA history? He had 42 in the loss overtime-wise to the Utah Jazz. The previous mark, 37, set by LeBron. But, Ryan, how about this for company as a rookie in the NBA? He doesn't turn 19 until Sunday. He also had 7 boards, 6 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal. He is the third teenager in NBA history, with at least 40 points, 5 boards, and 5 assists, joining who? Kevin Durant and the aforementioned LeBron James. Can't wait to take a look at him come Thursday night, huh?
Incredible. You know, I do believe the NBA is in such good hands with some of these younger players that are so exciting to watch week, night in, night out. I'm looking forward to it. And this Pistons run, and, you know, just the fact that it's, you know, the NBA and NBC and the Pistons feel like they're on the cusp of something special over the next 10 years. I'm a big fan. When the home team is good, I feel like my interest level in the league as a whole is up. For instance, the Pistons are good now. My interest in the NBA overall is now up around league-wide. Same with the Red Wings, to be quite frank with you. The Red Wings, I mean, you're watching hockey every night because 7 points separates first place from last place in the division. Crazy.
Well, and I think Hockey Town is just hoping, like, H-E double hockey sticks, as a matter of fact, that the Winged Wheelers break the 9-year postseason drought. Quickly, your Michigan football Wolverines getting ready for Texas in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. That going down December 31st. And Biff Pogge, the interim football coach there at Michigan, made some statements yesterday. As a matter of fact, pretty much his first since the nightmare went down in A-squared. And he just basically put his cards on the table, saying that his players feel betrayed and angry following the firing of Sherrone Moore. As a matter of fact, Ryan, he went on to say that the players were pretty much given a choice if they wanted to play in this Citrus Bowl with everything going on. And he would go on to say that he thinks the preparation that's leading up to the tilt with Texas has helped them. But what an absolute mess. And I can imagine how this story here involving Moore has just deflated everybody in that building.
No doubt. And I think, and I said earlier, Steve, I think Biff is the right guy for right now. Do I think he should be the head coach moving forward? No, of course not. But in this interim, steady the ship, calming hand, I think he is the perfect guy to lead this ball club out of a little bit of a storm here of uncertainty. I think he's a perfect guy for it.
It's going to be interesting to see who they call in to fix what is...
I think it's going to be Kenny Dillingham. I really do.
His name's being thrown around left and right there at Arizona State.
I really
State.
Do.
And, by all accounts, most under the impression, Ryan, that he would be the right guy at the right time.
If Alabama loses to Oklahoma, I'm still not going to say it won't be Caleb DeBoer.
Although he was rather emphatic saying, look,
he was,
we're happy in Tuscaloosa.
He was. Let's see how happy he is if they lose to Oklahoma. That's all I'm saying. Oh, all right, Steve, we'll be listening. Mitch Albom Show next, 760 WJR.